Hey folks, it's Brian Cook, your host here, with a couple of words from this week's sponsor. In her delightfully witty new historical series, Vanessa Kelly introduces the Improper Princesses, three young women descended from royalty, each bound for her own thrilling adventure and each destined to find love in unexpected places. The first installment, My Fair Princess, is a fun retelling of the classic movie musical My Fair Lady. Available now everywhere books are sold, this sizzling Regency romance finds the excessively proper, distractingly handsome Duke of Leverton tasked with transforming wild and carefree Gillian Dryden from a willful tomboy to a blushing debutante. Will he curb Jillian's wild habits and instill some proper English manners? Not bloody likely if she has her way. My Fair Princess by Vanessa Kelly is a lively Regency romp you do not want to miss. Available now everywhere books are sold. Visit kensingtonbooks.com or vanessakellyauthor.com for more info.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 168 of the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Apologies, I know it's been a while since I put out an episode. There's been a number of extenuating circumstances, not the least of which being that somebody stole my fucking audio recorder, which had several episodes recorded, and I had not backed them up like a bad host. But here we are, we're back. I'm going to try to do this twice a month, every other week. Let's say first and third Saturdays. We'll see if that works out. The next live show, September 18th at the Virgil in Los Angeles. That's free, as always, 7:30 p.m. And September 30th at Big Hunt in Washington, D.C. That is $10. Get those tickets online. Today's show was recorded back on May 18th, 2016 at the Virgil. This is round one featuring T.J. Chambers, Deb DiGiovanni, Jesse Elias, and David Merej, reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy.
Keep it going for your first round one competitor who's brought a prepared piece. Yeah. David Merej.
Kanye stood in his secret shed. The shed located in the backyard of the West residence, directly adjacent to the slightly smaller house that was devoted to his collection of shoes, clothes, and erratic emotions. He had been in his room alone for 4 days and four nights, so that he was only left with his thoughts and tools. His wife, Kim, had been sent away to France for the weekend. He had put her in a fanciest car, which was filled with croissants and the finest coffee. She couldn't be there for this. A mind as dull as hers could not fathom the sheer excitement and sensual contraption that he was to create. Sweat trickled down his temples. His back was also drenched in sweat. Let's be honest. He was sweating everywhere. His heart pounded in his chest, and he knew it was time. He had completed what he had set out to do. Kanye slid his hand over the multicolored machine that resembled something of a cross between an old chapel and a futuristic spaceship. He stroked the curves of his creation ever so innocently. A breeze swept through a window that was cracked open ever so slightly, calming him and cutting the tension he felt for his masterpiece. Stepping a few feet back, Kanye opened his arms and threw his chest forward. He screamed into the night, a scream of pure, unadulterated joy. His time machine was finally complete. Just then, he heard a knock at the door. He hadn't been expecting anyone that night. How could this be? No one knew of his shed. Filled with fear and angst, Kanye slowly made his way to the door. He put his coarse hand, weathered from days of construction, on the knob. As he turned the knob, curiosity overtook his mind. Standing in the doorway was something he could have never imagined, but also was not surprised. There stood Kanye West, but not Kanye we have known thus far. This one was even more muscular and somehow slightly taller, with a scarf around his neck. He had a different eye color, reminiscent of a jaguar, and at a quick glance, he appeared to be hovering off the ground. This was Kanye of the future. Confidently, future Kanye inched closer. May I come in, he asked. Consumed with both awe and envy, Kanye moved out of the way. Future Kanye untied the scarf from his own neck and wrapped it around Kanye's shoulders. Future Kanye looked directly into Kanye's eyes and leaned close, his hot breath on Kanye's cheek. I'm in need of a back rub. Because I've been carrying the music industry on my shoulders for a decade. Proclaimed future Kanye. Kanye put his hands on future Kanye and led him to an all-white silk couch and placed him on the cushion. Walking around the couch to stand directly behind, Kanye worked his thumbs into future Kanye's shoulders. Future Kanye relaxed under the weight of Kanye's hands, releasing a single groan of pleasure. Kanye's blood began to pulse, an experience of hearing his own sexual pleasures. He reached further down future Kanye's massive chest, sliding his hands towards his stomach further and further down, finally reaching the zipper of future Kanye's $10,000 pants. Future Kanye grabbed Kanye's hand away, or slapped his hand, grabbed it, slapped it at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense. But in Kanye's world, it does very much. He stopped him from going further. So young, but so lost. I remember these hands, future Kanye whispered. Future Kanye rose from the couch in a bulge in his pants. Kanye felt his own pants getting tighter. He walked over to future Kanye and forced his hand into future Kanye's mouth, gagging him slightly. Kanye pulled his hand back out and he watched his future self wipe his mouth. I love what happens next, said future Kanye. What do you mean, asked Kanye. He goes, I've already lived this as you, the Kanye of the present, future Kanye said. I've been dying for the day I could return and make this more magical. Now lust for me. Without any warning, Kanye ripped future Kanye's pants off and threw him to the ground, knocked down the table and a Grammy. Kanye pushed future Kanye to his back and inserted his finger into his own mouth, sucking it like a lollipop. He slid the lubricated finger into future Kanye's asshole. His face was stoic with no smile. Kanye continued to jam his finger in and out of future Kanye's asshole, staring at him with intensity as if he had killed his whole family and was out for revenge. Future Kanye clawed at the ground with pleasure as Kanye removed his finger and face planted into future Kanye's ass. Splitting his cheeks apart, Kanye dipped his tongue into future Kanye's crevice, sliding in and out, back and forth. It was too much. Future Kanye began to slide his own hand up and down on his throbbing dick. Kanye continued to lick way more vigorously while future Kanye jerked himself off to the point of climax. Present Kanye peeked up, watching the cum spill over his tip like a volcano. Future Kanye's entire body relaxed, and Kanye noticed that he began to look translucent. Future Kanye's body was disintegrating into vapors. Future Kanye looked into Kanye's eyes and smiled. I'll never forget you.
David Maresch, thanks, man. Keep it going for Deb DiGiovanni.
Okay, well, I made a huge mistake because I forgot that I'm old and no one here is, like, probably I could have babysat most of you. Now, first of all, I was going to do one about, I'm obsessed with an Instagram model. I'm not proud of myself, but it's true. I'm obsessed. His name is Christopher Mason. Look him up. And he has a little video of him chewing gum and he undoes his tie and I jerk off to that 3 times a week. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie. And then I started writing. Yeah.
You can't tell us how old you are. No. I didn't know Instagram models were a fucking thing.
It's sad. I'm kind of strange that way. I'm old and new together. But here's the thing. I wrote a story about him, but then I was like, I'm keeping this for myself. Fuck you people. Do you know what I'm saying? That's later, Brian. All right. So what I did, I went for something that none of you are going to know. First of all, how old are you? Are you 30, like 32? 38?
Yeah.
Oh, I might have a chance. All right, everyone. This is... it's happy days. Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, so happy.
All right, come on. Maybe not as well as I do, and nor should you. It all began at Arnold's, Milwaukee's Den of Iniquity. Sure, it seemed like a burger joint and a sock hop, but we all know that Milwaukee is an old Indian term for super sexy town of sexiness. Look it up. And what happened at Arnold's after 9:30 p.m. on weekdays and 10:30 p.m. on weekends was positively scandalous. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday... happy days indeed. Now, let's be honest. The part owner of the juke joint, Mechanic Fonzie, was a whore. We all know it, but no one ever said anything for some reason. Even in his work mechanic's onesie, he still had it. This power of seduction that girls were unable or too frightened to resist. A mere snap of his fingers and women dropped to their feet. To his feet, sorry. Creepy, yes, but also sexy. Tonight was like any other night. The gang was enjoying the house band made up of a couple of men far too old to be hanging out with teenagers. Potsy Weber, mentally slow but well-groomed. Ralph Melf, the ginger funny one. They always are, the gingers. Hello, Brian. And accompanied by Fonzie's young, sleeveless cousin, Charles Arcola, on drums. They call him Chachi. We don't know why, but who gives a fuck? He's so hot! All right. At a nearby table, Joni Cunningham, a slim, badly permed ingenue, was eating French fries with her mother, Marion. Marion, or Mrs. C, is a lovely woman in a circle skirt and an updo, and she felt at home amongst the kids. Sure, it's weird that Joni was hanging out with her mom, but it was the 50s. Shit was weird. Joni was presently dating Chachi since he got all tall and hot but completely ignored him for years and years, but he still loved her, the lucky bitch. And Mrs. C had left her tubby hubby at home for the night. He was at the Leopard Lodge wearing a fez and clearly doing homosexual stuff. Marion did not care. Tonight she was here for Arthur Fonzarelli. Fonzie, the Fonz, as the kids called him. Tonight, Mrs. C would be one of the mindless, submissive girls Fonzie treated so callously. Tonight, the C in Mrs. C wouldn't stand for Cunningham. Tonight, the C would stand for cum or clit or something else filthy that starts with C. I could only think of two. Like mother, like daughter, Joni also had smut on her mind as she watched her boyfriend Chachi play the drums. Have you seen dudes play the drums? It is super hot, okay? It's really hot. Anyway, as of this moment, she and Chachi had only made out, and made out hard. It's a miracle that Chachi hadn't physically damaged himself from his constant blue balls, but this was a family show, so what are you gonna do? But tonight, they were gonna go to second base or something. Shortcake was gonna give Chachi a surprise. That was her nickname, Shortcake. Okay, anyway, you all have homework to enjoy this. Finally, the terrible band had played their last song and Arnold's was almost empty except for the aforementioned cast members. Fonzie was in his office, the men's bathroom, which was kind of disgusting, but Marion didn't care. She wanted things to get dirty, including Fonzie's hands. The Fonz approached the table, now wearing his usual uniform of ridiculously light denim jeans, leather jacket and t-shirt. He'd been picking up the vibes that Marion had been putting down. And even though she'd always treated him like a son and was his landlord, this didn't bother Fonzie. He loved inappropriate stuff. Hey, he drawled his catchphrase for the 1,000,000th time, and Joni knew that was her cue to leave her mother alone with this hoodlum with a heart of gold. Besides, she had to go get herself some Chachi in a big way. Meanwhile, Potsy and Ralph had packed up their things and retired to their strange one-bedroom apartment that they shared. They were doing it for months now, so this was actually an ordinary night for them, totally gay. But for Arnold's, things were getting sufficiently arousing. Joni loves Chachi, but not for a few more years until After Happy Days is canceled. But tonight, for sure, she was gonna like him a lot. Let's get out of here before we have to watch my mom do it with your cousin, she told the tightly panted boyfriend, and you didn't have to ask him twice. Chachi vaulted himself over the bandstand barrister just because it's so athletic and hot. Joni rushed out after him, and now they were alone. Fonzie slammed his fist against a wall to dim the lights and did the same to the jukebox. It seemed he could punch anything to life, and now Mrs. C's undies would join that list. Fonzie sidled up to her on the same side of the table and purred, I am horny, Amundo. Marion Cunningham was now flush with excitement. She was almost sure that Fonz was going to be an excellent lover, but since it was the 50s and she'd been a virgin on her wedding night and was married to Howard Cunningham, she really didn't have a high standard. Oh my goodness, Arthur, she giggled, fiddling with her pearl necklace nervously. Fonzie smiled at her shy response and leaned in, relishing the pearl necklace he would bestow upon his surrogate mother later. I knew that. I'd look that up. Anyway, his erection surged in his pants. Flustered, she blushed and admitted bashfully, I don't know what to do. Oh, but Fonzie knew, and he told her so. Mrs. C, he whispered, sit on it. Oh, I'm so sorry. God bless you. Good night, everyone. Bye.
Deb DiGiovanni. Giving over Jesse Elias.
So, has anyone here seen the movie Blackfish?
Okay, here we go. It was another beautiful day at SeaWorld Orlando. Flabby, fanny-packed families flocked to the 3 o'clock killer whale show in single file, which is fortunate because in most cases the entrance wasn't wide enough to accommodate more than one of their fat asses at a time. Hundreds of ugly children squealed in anticipation, eager to see their favorite issue of Zoo Books summoned to life before their stupid blue popsicle-stained faces. Little did they realize they were in store for something much, much more special. Floating backstage was Tilikum, the park's most prized bull orca and SeaWorld's main source of breeding stock. As they had been instructed to do once a day, trainers were now collecting sperm from Tilikum using a cow's vagina filled with hot water. Go on Wikipedia if you don't believe me. Come on, Tilly, said trainer Ken Patterson. It's Wawa time. Tilikum needed no further prompting. Wawa time was his favorite time. He rolled on his back and purred. A crooked pink branch extended upward from his abdomen. Good Tilly, another trainer said, throwing a few dead fish in his mouth as Ken guided the whale's penis into the dead cow vagina. It takes a lot of dead animals to make a baby at SeaWorld. It was ironic. Tilikum had sired hundreds of children in this fashion, and yet he would probably die a virgin. Kept in solitary confinement from the other whales, he had never once tasted the black and white caviar perfection of true orca pussy. The only females he'd ever interacted with were the abusive matriarchs who scarred and raked him with their teeth when he was first introduced into captivity. Recalling the memory now made his soul hurt harder and his dick even more erect. Tilikum was thrusting more violently than usual now. Ken felt a twinge of fear as the dead cow vagina began to give way in his hands, but he continued to press on. They had to hurry if Tilly was going to make his curtain call for the 3 o'clock show. That thought was the last thing to go through Ken's head. Or rather, the second to last, right before Tilikum's dick, which punched through the organic beef fleshlight and straight into his gasping face. With a mighty roar, Tilikum flapped out of the water and pinned the man down beneath him, crushing his bones again and again with each face fucking thrust. The other trainer, Don Buchanan, dumped an entire bucket of mackerel on the ground, hoping to lure Tilikum away from Ken with tasty treats. Her strategy worked. The beast rolled off his victim and lumbered towards the tasty fish, gobbling it down in 2 seconds before launching himself on top of her. She screamed in terror as Tilikum's mighty whale hood tore through her wetsuit and into her living human vagina, which wasn't really better or worse than a dead cow vagina, just different. But when you do the same thing every day, different is very, very good. Tilikum, no, she cried. Don't do this. We love you. I love you too, Tilikum whispered in her ear. Holy shit, you can talk, would have been her last words if she herself had been able to talk with 1,800 pounds of gyrating blubber crushing the air out of her lungs. Meanwhile, the 3 o'clock show audience had no idea what was happening backstage. The announcer's pre-recorded voice came over the speakers. Ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for. And this was when the pre-programmed gates would open and Tilikum would come racing out to the delight of all the adoring children and their families. Instead, he came out with 2 dead bodies draped across his back, parading them around the tank like the latest fall fashion. The crowd screamed and flew into a panic. Tilikum swam up to the edge of the tank and spat bloody chunks of dead cow vagina on a Spaniard woman and her 38-year-old son who had foolishly elected to sit in the splash zone. The pre-recorded announcer rattled on. As you can see, Tilikum is very playful. Tilikum rammed through the gates of the adjoining tanks, freeing more whales and more creatures into the main pool. Animal friends, he said, I have found something even better than Wawa time. Come and I will show you. With Tilikum's guidance, they all learned how to have sex without human assistance. He gave a long, passionate kiss to a female bottlenose dolphin named Rachel, opening his mouth wider and wider until he sucked her entire head in. A young male dolphin named Lucas swam up and began to fuck the wriggling lower half of Rachel that was protruding from Tilikum's lips, while the bristling kiss of a whiskered walrus tickled Tilikum's anus. A spry harbor seal saw a big-titted manatee and proceeded to motorboat the shit out of it. Which is funny, because when manatees get motorboated, it's usually on the other side. Fueled by carnivorous instinct, Tillicum swallowed the female of Dolphin whole. He could feel her wriggling inside him. It felt good. Lucas cried for his lost love, but Tillicum swallowed him too, and the dolphin lovers were reunited inside of the whale's guts like Pinocchio and Geppetto, where they made love again and again until they died together entwined in eternal Liebestod. And now for the main course, Tillicum thought, spying the gaping pussy of Fiona, the sexiest female orca in all of the park. I'm gonna fuck you till I come, said Tillicum. And he did, again and again and again. He fucked all her holes, her pussy, ass, blowhole. Unfortunately, whales need their blowholes to breathe. By now, the SeaWorld police had showed up with their whale-grade taser guns. They shot Tillicum many times, but the electricity just made his penis harder. Pain was his pleasure now. Fiona cried as asphyxiation began to take hold, but Tillicum wouldn't withdraw his penis from her blowhole. Tillicum, stop, said the wise old manatee. You'll kill her. I don't care, said Tillicum. All his life, sex had been nothing but dead meat rubbed on his dick. Women had only given him pain ever since he'd been stolen from his loving mother in the brackish waters of Iceland and forced to live in isolation for the entertainment of these hairless apes. She is your daughter, said the manatee. Don't you realize the entire purpose of Wawa time has been to gather your sperm to create children? My daughter? Tillicum withdrew his penis from Fiona and buoyed her to the surface for air, praying that it wasn't too late. Well, what have I done? He looked at her lifeless body and hoped that she would awake. My daughter, I'm sorry. At last, Tillicum had learned the true meaning of love.
Jesse Elias. Keeping going for your final round one competitor, TJ Chambers.
Thank you. We're recording this for CISO, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Can't wait to see it air. The din of Midtown Manhattan was barely audible, like a hushed conversation from another room, or the sound that a dick makes as it slides in, that we're all kind of pretending not to notice, unless that's a thing you're into. Cynthia Jo Ferguson quietly regretted the robust lunch she'd had at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company in Times Square, as she nervously fidgeted in line. Her current presence here in New York City was a result of an uncharacteristically lavish Mother's Day gift from Bill and the kids. I finally won the Greater Des Moines Mitsubishi sales contest, he'd said, sliding over a Spirit Airlines ticket and a reservation at the Days Inn Newark. Go follow your dream. Her dream, the one thing that had consumed her every thought, was scoring a ticket in the open lottery to see Hamilton. Regular tickets were going for a staggering $700, more than Tina and Braden's entire school clothes budget for the year. Ever since she'd first heard it, tentatively purchasing the dual disc album at Target, after seeing a Hamilton piece on the CBS Evening News, she knew it was for her. Despite no real education in or fucks given about history, and having zero engagement with a cultural touchstone that is hip-hop music, Cynthia Jo Ferguson nonetheless lost her ever-loving shit for Hamilton. She was at this moment saying as much to the woman standing next to her, Gloria, an uptown type who'd already paid to see Hamilton 11 times, but was relegated to the lottery due to a downtick in the Manhattan real estate market. It's just so culturally diverse, said Gloria, a white lady, while brazenly fingering herself under Louis Vuitton panties. If Louis Vuitton makes panties, I don't honestly know. Cynthia couldn't agree more. She'd never met any Puerto Ricans or Dominicans or blacks, or was it Negroes? She resolved to look that up later. But that didn't stop her from identifying down to her snowy core with a story of rebels, outsiders, and immigrants that told the birth of America through a rainbow of diverse voices, despite the fact that all the real characters in history were actually super duper white. This was her one chance, her shot. The numbers were about to be called. Cynthia shuddered in anticipation, just like Bill had shuddered when she'd given him an utterly pedestrian handjob a couple Father's Days ago. Her heart beat in her eardrums louder than the cannons commanded by George Washington, who in Hamilton was played by an actual black guy, BT Dubs. She didn't even hear them call the numbers. She just sensed Gloria screaming and pushing her towards the doors of the Richard Rogers Theater. She fumbled in her Kohl's purse and produced the cash to pay the amount needed for her lottery ticket, a single $10 bill. Because, do you get it? The Hamilton lottery tickets are $10. Do you Do you get it? Everyone pays in cash. They pay in one bill, and they pay. You guys get it. It's called Hamilton for Hamilton. That's literally what it's called. Look it up. There was barely time to grab the program that she couldn't wait to post to Facebook. She was ushered to her seat by ushers because that's how theater works. The lights dimmed lower than her son Braden's Iowa standardized test scores. It was time. The first actor sauntered on stage, wearing traditional, period-accurate, wealthy garb despite being, and once again, isn't this amazing, a black guy. The actor playing Aaron Burr was about to rap the opening lines of the play. But something was different. Every inch of Cynthia tingled as he seemed to look straight at her, right through her lens crafter's glasses and into her soul. He began the opening refrain, but the lyrics were somehow different. How does a Midwest housewife, bored with her boring life, somehow score a seat to the show of a lifetime? Dropped in a theater full of rich folks, every single one paid $800 for their tics, folks. When it comes to loving Hamilton, she changed the game, son. Stand up and tell them all. What's your name, hon? Cynthia Jo Ferguson. My name is Cynthia Jo Ferguson. And there's a million things I haven't fucked. But just you wait, just you wait. Why was she talking about sex at all? Because this piece is almost over and there hasn't been much fucking yet. Cynthia bound on stage as the entire cast surrounded her. They ripped off her Lane Bryants. Aaron Burr and Thomas Jefferson had their own duel, stroking their cocks 10 times and then turning to stick them into her. The Marquis de Lafayette did some weird French shit. And General Charles Lee choked her a little. Just like he had choked in command at the Battle of Monmouth. 16 Tonys fucked her every crevice. Not the awards, union stagehands named Tony. Cynthia barely cared about any of it though, because here came Hamilton himself. MacArthur genius, Broadway wunderkind, and goatee possessor, Lin-Manuel Miranda. He saw Cynthia's eager eyes and he began fucking her with his probably huge cock and his newly acquired Pulitzer Prize, which is maybe a trophy, maybe a medal, or maybe a certificate. That seems like something I could have Googled, but I did not. Cynthia wanted nothing more than a load of his scrappy, brilliant cum. Come inside me, she shouted, loud enough for everyone in the cheap seats to hear. The cheap seats are still $600. Miranda looked her right in the eyes and said, I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Ayo, I am close to coming. I'ma come on your tummy. I am not throwing away my shot. He pulled it out, and he burst approximately one sperm for every dollar he'd made off the show onto her pale skin. The entire theater grew hushed. There was a pause, and then every single person in the theater leapt to their feet. Ovations rang louder than the cash registers at the merch table, and confetti ran from the arched ceiling, but cut from little pieces of the original Federalist Papers, because that's how much fucking money that show makes. Lin-Manuel Miranda held Cynthia in his arms and gazed over the crowd as she felt his cock begin to stir again. And that was just the matinee, he whispered.
TJ Chambers. Lead all the round one competitors back to the stage. Keep it going for your round one competitors. All right, so in a second, you guys are going to be voting with your applause on a winner. First, I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read. We started with David Marege with Kanye West, then Deb DiGiovanni with Happy Days, Jesse Elias with Blackfish, and TJ Chambers, doesn't matter, and TJ Chambers with Hamilton. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting with David Marege, Kanye West. Deb DiGiovanni, Happy Days. Jesse Elias, Blackfish. Yeah. And TJ Chambers, Hamilton. Cool four-way tie, guys. I wanted to be here all night. Thanks. Let's try this again. You're picking a winner, not merely showing your appreciation for all four of them. You have to hate one. Like, just pick one you really fucking hate. And then boo them. Don't do that. Let's try this all again. Fucking pick a favorite. David Marege, Kanye West. Deb DiGiovanni, Happy Days. Jesse Elias, Blackfish. You got a check mark for the whistle. TJ Chambers, Hamilton. I think that's Jesse Elias with Blackfish. That's a very close round. Mr. Jesse Elias, big round of applause for all of your round one competitors. Thanks, gang.
That does it for round one. To hear round two from this show, you can download episode 169 next week. And if you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. For details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.